is the ConservativeDailyBlog.com show podcast. I'm Brian, as usual, your guiding light in a world of absolute cold darkness. Yeah. Feels good to be back behind the microphone, as usual. A lot of issues, a lot of topics, a lot of events going on right now in Washington with the economy, healthcare, Acorn scandal, Obama's approval, Congress's approval, new candidates coming and going for next year's elections, midterm elections. So I don't know how long the show's going to be today. Not that it matters. Most of you don't even listen. But I'm going to start out today with something I actually agree with Barack Obama on. Can you believe that? Can you believe the words that I'm saying to you right now? I, Brian, actually agree with something Obama said. Okay, sorry. Yes. Website is www.conservativedailyblog.com. Email address, conservativedailyblog@gmail.com. Got a new column up there. You guys have probably read it if you visited the site. Check it out. And so, let's get to it first. First, something I agree with Barack Obama on. Got the clip ready? Okay, hit it.
Were your girls as hacked off as mine were that Kanye gave Taylor Swift the Joe Wilson treatment?
I thought that was really inappropriate. Yeah. You know? I mean, it's like she's getting an award. What are you buttoning in? I hear you. I agree with you.
John, does that count as the first question?
The young lady seems like a perfectly nice person. She's getting her award. What's he doing
Why would
up there?
Do that?
He's a jackass. All this stuff.
That's what Pink
said. I'm assuming all this stuff. Where's the pool? Come on, guys. Cut the president some slack. I got a lot of other stuff on my plate.
I thought that was really inappropriate. What was he doing up there? Come on, guys. Cut me some slack here. I'm the president. He's a jackass. Da-da-da-da-da. So except for that little, ego, little power trip there at the end, I agree with him. He was a jackass. You know, you go ahead and drink and have a good time at the award show. But, let's respect the other musicians and stars and whatever else they do there. Of course, I don't watch that garbage. And the questionnaire, questioning Obama there said, is your daughter such and such as ticked off or whatever he said about what Kanye did is mine. So does Obama's daughters watch that? I mean, as a parent, I would never let my 10, 11-year-old daughters or however old they are watch that garbage. But anyways, what Kanye did, yeah, it's just whatever. You know, these are the people that vote for Obama, and this is what you can expect from people like rappers and such who influence so much of our youth today with the gold chains and the bling and the thongs on dancing around cars with these big rims and having open sex on the hood of the car. You know, whatever they do these days and smoke their dope and powder their noses and, well, what can you say? Rap is garbage music. I know some people listening will be offended by that. And, of course, you could say the music that I listen to is garbage as well. But there's something that's a component of the rap scene, which is the, secular values and the drug abuse and the degradation of women, sort of like pornography. It's like there's a pornographic element, a drug element, a violence element, and a secular values element to the rap scene that I myself, music aside, think is a detrimental aspect that influences our youth and the culture and the fact that all the four major record companies make that their prominent genre they sign is disgusting in and of itself. Anyways, moving on here, let me talk about this whole racism thing. Of course, the big one on Drudge, if you looked at that the past day or two, has been Jimmy Carter coming out and saying that everyone who's an opponent of Obama or these people at the town hall meetings and then the march on 9/12 in Washington are racists, rednecks, whatever, far right, lunatics. The truth is it's a highly uneducated sort of comeback to the whole opposition of Obama thing. I mean, these people who are saying that these are former presidents, Ivy League scholars, politicians, and this is a blatant attempt to completely silence any debate because that's as far as they could go. Back in the 60s, 70s? Jeez, I'm drawing a blank here. It was the whole labeling of as communists, calling people communists, the whole McCarthy thing. So now with the half-black president, they're all resorting now to calling you a racist. This, of course, this, of course, is a Saul Alinsky tactic, is that you criticize your opponent because that's the best way to, knock them off their feet, and it's hard for them to come back after receiving, such a blatant label as a racist. And this, of course, being the most extreme. Now, the sad thing about all of this is that they're having to pull this out of the bag, the media and the left, at such an early stage of a brand new president. This is still the infancy of Barack Obama's presidency. So they're really screwed here. I mean, of course, this is not, I'm not going to deny the fact that there are people who are racist in the country. Of course there are. But to label every single individual, because that's what they're doing. They are, make no mistake about it, labeling every individual at these events, town hall meetings, and such, and people coming out publicly against Obama, they're labeling them all as racists. You know, and that is completely false. They know themselves that it's untrue, but of course there's no substance that the left can use to debate those on the right, because they're obviously lower in the polls, and the Obama speeches on TV don't help, and he's giving 5 on Sunday on the morning shows and the Meet the Press, George Stephanopoulos, etc., and then Monday and Letterman, and this is a narcissistic, egomaniac president, but his advisors, what good is that, Emmanuel and Axelrod, but his advisors should know and look at stats and look at polling data and know that this is killing him. He goes on his TV, says nothing new, it's cult of personality, drawing everyone in to his persona and his character. It's over. That's lost. The honeymoon's over. It's not going to work anymore. He should pull it back. No president's ever appeared on a late night show. The Tonight Show, and then now Dave Letterman. But no president's done any before. And there's no polling data that shows the result of committing and doing that kind of thing. But being on TV in general and the overexposure this man has is absolutely destroying him. So I would think that his advisors would be up on this, but obviously that they're not. So anyways, the racism thing is being pulled out of the hat by these prominent Maureen Dowd, a secular feminist, their lead columnist at the New York Times, and then Jimmy Carter and other Democrats, of course, Durbin, and I know was one of them, and I don't have a list offhand, there's no exact ones, but anyways, the fact that they're pretty much in agreement here on the left that they're committing to this label of racism now against any of Obama's opponents is not good. They're losing, and this is not good if they're planning on holding their seats in the Congress next fall. And this is not good if they want to pass this health. I mean, Obama's three or four main domestic agendas are health care, which is the big one, of course, right now, and the one that's his top priority domestically, then cap and trade, and the card check with the unionizing of the labor and workforce. And then was there a fourth one? Healthcare. And, I can't think it offhand. But anyways, these are going to kill these bills, every one of them. And if he doesn't, if he can't pass healthcare, of course, that his presidency, he himself admits you're going to destroy my presidency if you don't vote for his plan. So if that comes falling down, and then if they keep doing these tactics they're doing, these sleazy tactics, they're going to lose everything else. And he's going to be a failed president with less than a year of him being in office. and he's going to drag his feet for the next three and whatever, and then suffer a horrendous defeat. And there's even discussions now that he wouldn't be the front runner for the Democratic Party, that they wouldn't even nominate him. But anyways, regardless, is that, you know, this is not good for him, and he's continuing to make poor decisions, and his staff and his handlers are blowing it for him too. So it's not just him, but those around him and the leadership of the Democratic Party. And what can I say? They got a taste of their own medicine in the last few months, the meetings and the rallies and the protests. So, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? Well, what needs to be done is for us not to let up the efforts, continue the emails, continue speaking out, being mindful of the issues, and just arguing on substance. The Joe Wilson thing I didn't agree with. But what can you say? That there's no opposition. The media is not doing their jobs. That's because he felt the only way, the only venue where he could make his voice be heard and make in like his donations and such, and people coming to his defense show that he represented a lot of Americans there. And I just lost track of what I was saying. Yes. So keep doing what we're doing. It's good. And in the meantime, also, this is a time where we need to be reevaluating the Republican Party, moving towards conservatism, because we now see how moderate candidates, John McCain's and whatnot, aren't what this party needs. We need to reinvent ourselves, re-examine our positions, look towards Reagan, look towards the founding principles of the country. And in the next segment, I'm going to talk about right now it's 4 a.m. on an early Thursday morning, and we are having our former economic advisor to Ron Paul's campaign, Peter Schiff, who's a genius, who's predicted the recession and is predicting another second Great Depression, will be announcing his candidacy in the state of Connecticut against Chris Dodd tomorrow on PMMSMSNLGBT. MSNBC. So I'm counting down now. It's three or so hours, and by the time you hear this, he'll have announced his decision on that. And this is the type of people, libertarians like Peter Schiff and Ron Paul, with a combination of Reagan conservatives, and together that'd be the ultimate Republican Party. And this is something I'll probably write about or discuss in the near future on the show. But right now, I'm coming up on a break. And when I come back, I'm going to talk about my latest column, The Economy, which goes along with Peter Schiff's announcement tomorrow, because his philosophy, the Ron Paul, the Austrian economic philosophy, is the correct philosophy in the whole Ken. Anyways, I'm getting ahead of myself. This is break number one. You're listening to the ConservativeDailyBlog.com show podcast. We'll be right back right after this.
The record, a couple of important documents. Mr. Alford, we had your address as Washington, D.C., but
that's correct, ma'am.
You live in Washington, D.C.?
Or personally? I live in Bethesda, yeah. Maryland.
Okay, because you said you were from California.
I'm a native Californian, born and raised.
Yeah, but right now...
I was there when you came.
You don't know when I came. Now,
it's after 62.
Actually, you're right on target. So we're going to put that in the record. Then we're going to put the NAACP resolution that passed, saying this: the NAACP approved a historic resolution addressing climate change legislation for the first time in the organization's history.
What does that mean?
Sir, we're going to put that in the record, and you can read it because I don't have the time, but I'll read the
rest. What does that mean, though? I mean, NAACP has a resolution. What does that mean?
Sir, they could say the same thing about what do you mean? I'm just telling you.
I've got documentation.
They passed it, sir. They passed it. Now, also, if that isn't interesting to you, we'll quote John Grant, who is the CEO of 100 Black Men of Atlanta. Quote, clean energy is the key that will unlock millions of jobs, and the NAACP's support is vital to ensuring that those jobs help to rebuild urban areas. So clearly, there's a diversity.
Madam Chair, that is condescending to me. I'm the National Black Chamber of Commerce, and you're trying to put up some other black group to pit against me.
If this gentleman were here, he would be proud that he was being quoted.
He should have been invited.
Just as he would be proud.
It is condescending to me.
Just so you know, he would be proud that you were here. He's proud, I'm sure,
I
am quoting him.
All that's condescending, and I don't like it. It's racial.
What's racial?
I don't like it.
Excuse me, sir.
I take offense to it.
Okay.
As an African-American and a veteran of this country, I take offense to that.
Offense at the fact that I would quote...
You're quoting some other black man. Why don't you quote some other...
No.
Asian or somebody.
Well,
you are being racial here.
Okay, let me be
And
clear.
I think you're getting to a path here that's going
to
explode.
I'm going
Senator, as I said, we've been looking at energy policy since 1996, and we are referring to the experts, regardless of their color. And for someone to tell me, an African-American, college-educated veteran of the United States Army, that I must contend with some other black group and put aside everything else in here. This has nothing to do with the NAACP and really has nothing to do with the National Black Chamber of Commerce. We're talking energy. And that road the chair went down, I think it's god-awful.
Yeah. So just a reminder there of who the actual party of racism is. So... They can only see things through the prism of color and diversity and acceptance and multiculturalism. If you remember the beer summit, which we talked about here on the show, the fact that Joe Biden was there, and I mean this wasn't reported on in the news, but it's pretty obvious to the free thinker out there is that the only reason he was there was to balance out the color at the table. So you got the black African-American college professor, the white cop from Massachusetts, Obama, and then that's two B's and one W. So they stick Biden in there, and then, you got 50-50. It's amazing. It's amazing that we're still on this. It's been beaten at Obama's presidency, and this is not cliched, is that it was supposed to be a new era of Washington, and that, this was a step forward in terms of equality, civil rights, whatever you want to say, but it's not. And many predicted that, including myself, that Obama's ascendancy to the throne wouldn't be the end of racism in America. In fact, we would be dragged down by it. And this is an issue that's not going to go away for the next almost 3.5 years. And it's just tough. We're stuck with this because no matter what happens, they're going to scream racism at the top of their lungs, and it's just going to be such a waste of time to even try to engage them in debates anymore. So let's move on here. Now, before the last break, I was talking about the candidacy in Connecticut of Peter Schiff. Like I say, former Ron Paul economist. Economist. And today, on PMMS MSNBC, he'll be announcing if he will, in fact, run, which is hours away. And by the time you hear this, we'll know the results of that. But this is the man who actually knows economics. And then Ben Bernanke and all these Keynesian economists. Don't know a damn thing about the economy. So we have a chance to get a real economist in the Senate to get in there and teach and knock some sense into these people's heads. So let's go back to, what's the date for this? August 28th, 2006, Peter Schiff on CNBC, where this was the first time he publicly predicted the recession that we are currently in right now. And he was debating against one of Reagan's many former economic advisors. And he just told it like it was, and he was right. And that's the title of the video, actually, is Peter Schiff Was Right. So here we go, CNBC, Peter Schiff, August 28, 2006 on CNBC, and go.
All that's increased is the paper values of our stocks and real estate. But that's not real wealth, no more than the NASDAQ was wealth. When you see the stock market come down and the real estate bubble burst, all that phony wealth is going to evaporate. And all that's going to be left is all the debt that we accumulated to foreigners.
Peter, I'm going to take a bet with you on this one. I'll bet you a penny on this one that if you'll sign a letter saying that if you're wrong, you'll sign a letter that you were wrong to me in this. But you're just way off base. There is nothing out there that tells us we're going to have a nice slowdown, but it's not going to be a
crash. Let me ask you this.
That's not real wealth. Of course it is. Of course it is. So, there you have it. Peter Schiff was right. And if he's right again, which he is, and I've wrote about this in my recent column, we're headed for a second and much more detrimental depression than the Great Depression of the 1930s. Hopefully, it can be minimized. Peter Schiff's the first candidate I've ever donated money to, and with my limited funds, I gave him about $100, which is not a lot, but it's something. Hopefully, he's able to get in there along with Ron Paul's son, Rand Paul. And then there's a few other, I don't have the names offhand, but there's a few others who know, who employ the same school of Austrian economics. And hopefully they can get in there and knock some sense into these senators' heads so we can vote to minimize the pain of the depression we're inevitably going to face. So I'm going to talk about that for a second here. The problem with our economy is the printing of money and the unlimited raising our debt ceiling and their unlimited pursuit of being able to go to unlimited ends to inflate the second bubble we're in here, which is not good. You can't print money and expect to create wealth, and you can't tax people higher and expect them to create jobs and to create real wealth. Now our economy is 70% consumption based, and people say like, "Wow, okay, well people are spending and prices are staying the same," but that's not. If you look at our trade deficit, we're essentially China's buying our debt, and then that debt's being returned to us in the form of the goods, and then we're buying and again, just it's nothing's being created here. And I'm trying to make this sound, I've never ever talked about economics before on this podcast or in general, so I'm trying to really simplify things as much as I can to make you understand. So basically, like I say, is we're a consumption based economy, so You're not seeing real data here. A lot of the data is fixed, of course, that you see on TV and that you hear talked about. But the reason we got in the mess we got in was taking on too much debt, and that debt could never be paid back. So when you see these programs like Cash for Clunkers or the government forcing Fannie and Freddie to give out these bad loans, is that people who could never have afforded the homes or the cars in the first place were able to enter the market on essentially borrowed money that the government issued to them. And since they weren't able to buy it there was a reason they weren't able to buy it before, it's because they didn't have the money. So as we've seen with the housing bubble, or the housing market, I'm sorry, is that people took on these loans and ultimately weren't able to pay them back. And then with the cars, it's a smaller scale, the Cash for Clunkers, but the reason people didn't buy the cars is they couldn't afford them. So the $4,500 grant from the government is essentially them taking cars which they've paid for and that actually have use, destroying those cars, and then purchasing a new car and taking on, look at this, a whole nother group or a bunch of new debt. And the fact that, sorry to go off base a little and talk about the Cash for Clunkers, the fact that the cars were destroyed is a direct attack on the lower middle class even, and like especially young people like myself. I mean, most people's first car is a clunker. My first car was a clunker. I'm sure your first car was a clunker. Everyone's first, they work, they serve a purpose, they're cheap. Then why take cars and destroy them? Especially even if they weren't driven or they weren't used in their full form, they could be scrapped for prices. And I said in the column that they would be able to count against the debt they took on with the new car. I mean, they could sell parts here and there, get maybe $1,000, $2,000, and that $2,000 makes the purchase of that car and you incurring ultimately less debt. And the whole global, the fact that it has to do with global warming and this whole BS of carbon emissions just makes me very, very, very pissed off, let me just say lightly, and use sort of appropriate language for, of course, this being a family show. But that's what's happening. I mean, we're bailing out these industries that are being rewarded essentially for being mischievous and acting irresponsibly, which contributed part with the housing bubble of the recession. And so money is being printed out of thin air. Back to what I was saying about this depression and stuff is that what happens with inflation is the supply of money increases, and then as a result, prices increase. Most people say that prices increase. The sole indicator of inflation is a price increase, but it's not. It's actually the change in the supply of money. Now, when inflation occurs, our dollar is going to sink in value, and part of the reasons our dollar hasn't fallen yet is because China, we've been able to convince China to prop up our dollar. So once that stops happening and people wake up and realize that the fun and games are over and the party's got to end, we're screwed. We are screwed, 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 screwed. And the fact that we see China calling for a new global currency and that the United Nations and other people are suggesting a new currency, and that, I mean, people are waking up now very slowly, and who knows how long it's going to be. I mean, top people, Peter Schiff even, and Ron Paul, they're not even sure about how long it's going to be, but it's going to happen, and we're going to be sunk big time. So, of course, you know, they're suggesting buy gold and buy commodities that, you know, are not tied to the dollar, have their own value and whatnot. So, And the reason is because the depression we're inevitably going to have, the second great, longer, more painful, is because the same mistakes we made before are being blown up, double, triple even, and making it that much worse than it had previously had been. We're not learning at all from these mistakes. And that's why, back to the beginning of the segment, I said is we need people to know what the hell they're doing in the Senate, in the Treasury, and where I'm not going to go off on the Fed and get into the issues like that. That's a whole other thing, but we need to wake up and realize that the party's over, and that we can't play games just for political expediency to save these candidacies these politicians' careers. It's got to end. The representatives of us got to realize that they have to put our interests first. I know that's hard for them to do. I know they like to play fun and games and, you know, attend their cocktail parties and have their merry fun just at our expense. But it's got to end, and it will, unfortunately. But in the meantime, we can't take on any more debt. We gotta knock it off. And this healthcare proposal was initially what, $1.5 trillion, according to the Congressional Budget Office, and now Max Baucus, whatever the hell those committees are doing, they said it's going to be like what, $800 billion. So whatever, round up, it's a trillion. We can't afford this. This is, and of course, and anything the government predicts winds up ultimately costing, I don't even know how much. It's ridiculous amount more than they originally predicted. We can't. It's got to stop. We got to put up our. You got to put up our hand and say, no, this is it. Stop right where you are. Knock this off. It just can't go on. You're going to destroy the dollar and ultimately destroy the quality of life for us Americans. It's horrible. Everything has to do, all these policies have to ultimately do with the value of the dollar and the quality of life in America. This is all very bad stuff. So, and anyways, read that column I put up. I also have I found this lecture by this professor guy. I guess he's a professor. He's an economist, and he gave a lecture, which I put up on the site under must see videos, about how unregulated capitalism is the best moral ideology, how that's the best form of an economic system in existence. So I myself haven't watched. I watched the there's one out of seven or one out of seven. I watched the first portion of that, and I think you'd learn a lot from that. Also, under the must-see videos is that Hyperinflation Nation, which is very easily watchable with great sound bites from people and graphs and whatnot, very easily understood. And I think it'd do everyone good just to, you know some basic, get the whole Great Depression, FDR, which is, we talk about the Keynesian economic model. That's the model in Washington right now, and it's continued since then. And it's unfortunate that, you know, we still have to make the same mistakes, but it's happening. So I'm going to take a second break here. Sorry for the rambling, and I didn't do any show prep today. None, actually. So it's a lot of free association, so I'm sorry if I'm mumbling and stuttering again. Still my infancy of doing these podcasts, but I appreciate the emails and whatnot, and the feedback we've been getting, very helpful. And read my column, and I think Chris is coming out with his latest one pretty soon. And again, if anyone wants to be a contributor of the site, to write, to suggest ideas for the show, please email us, conservativedailyblog at gmail.com. And you go, it's the link or that email if you forget it, which I don't know how the hell you would. Yeah, just go to the site, has everything there, conservativedailyblog.com. And yeah, it's cool. It's cool. I've been trying to keep it updated. I'm doing it myself right now because we had some change in ownership or change in staff. But yeah, go to that site. We try to put news stories that, you know, you might not see in other places. And of course, those video must see videos. I've subscribed to tons of people on YouTube, and I go through it for like an hour every day and pick out what I like and either incorporate it into the show, or I post it on the conservativedailyblog.com. So check out the site daily, at least a few times a day. Put it on a tab, bookmark it, whatever you want to do. And yeah, it's cool. So it's break number two. You're listening to the Conservative Daily Blog Show podcast. We will be right back. That's going to do it for me here on the podcast today. It's currently 5 in the morning. Gotta actually go to work in a few hours. Well, that's what happens when you don't get on the right sleeping schedule. But anyways, yeah, I'm sorry to cut it short. But like I say, gotta earn some money here in this economy. I'm lucky to even be employed. Yeah. So, yeah, check out the site, www.conservativedailyblog.com. Email address, conservativedailyblog@gmail.com. Again, check out my latest column or two if you haven't. I try to adopt my own unique writing style. So if you read it and it doesn't sound like, you know, your typical pull up your butthole, typical, you know, columnist you read, I'm sorry. Live with it. I think you got to live with it. So, and then also check out Chris's columns. Very, very insightful. He's a very gifted scholar, and I enjoy his writing very much. It makes me feel very good to read. So do yourself a favor and check those out. Check the site regularly as we try to post news you probably don't hear in other places. And of course, my massive project of gathering the best YouTube videos I can find. so I've subscribed to thousands of channels, and I go through it like hours every day and pick out ones that are particularly insightful, and you'll learn a lot from watching those. And of course, posting those documentaries and such, like I said, that that lecture that we posted of unregulated capitalism, how it's the most moral system and fairest for all. And you'll learn a lot. I myself am probably going to watch a little bit more of that. Haven't watched the whole thing yet. So check it out. Check out the site. Check out the columns. And hope you enjoyed the podcast on this on this day of Thursday, September 17th, 2009. I am Brian from conservativedailyblog.com, and we will see you next time.